Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Welcome back, everyone. Super, super excited to be here today with Liz Elam, a true pioneer of the co-working world. She built Link Co-working in Austin into one of the city's biggest brands and became the first woman in the world to profitably exit a co-working company. She went on to found Juicy, G-C-U-C, which is now the largest co-working conference on the planet. You know, it's run across six continents. She's all over the globe. She's a futurist. She's a speaker. She's someone who thinks deeply about the future of work and really using community to fight the loneliness epidemic. Liz, welcome to The Psychology of Work. I, you know, just adore any and all time I have with you. And I'm so happy to sort of share your story here. But who are you?
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah. You know, I'm a co-working nerd. I was actually working remotely for a little company called Dell. And there wasn't like a good place to go work and be around other people. And I started dreaming up this idea of a shared workspace. And then when I looked into it in about 2008, I was like, wow, this is something that's needed. And there's this thing called co-working. And at that time, there were about 50 spaces in the world. Today, there's over 40,000.
Holy cow. 2008, did you say?
Yeah. Interesting. That's when it's grown really quickly. I mean, it's an industry on fire. Yeah. And as somebody that's always thinking about the future, I saw kind of where this would probably go. So in 2010, I opened my own co-working space. In 2019, I sold it when I had three locations here in Austin and I was the third largest. And then in 2011, I attended a half-day unconference around South by Southwest. And I got to meet all these people that were so incredible. And I learned so much in one day. And the operators called me that summer and said, do you want to take this over? And I was like, hell yeah, I want to take it over. So I renamed it and launched it. It's Juicy in 2012. And in April, we just executed our 50th event. And so, you know, we estimate probably about 30,000 people in the world have been to a Juicy event.
And holy cow.
And our purpose is I really want to proliferate co-working around the world because I've figured out that through co-working, we can make a meaningful dent in the loneliness epidemic.
I mean, there's like so much beauty in that and so much has changed from 2008 till now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I know you're on this mission, right? For loneliness and really helping tackle mental health issues and just bringing people together. And like, what, you know, tell me about that. What drives it? What's your vision? You're also a futurist, right? You can really kind of peek into the what's coming. Like, what does that look like? What's your why here?
You know, the thing is what I figured out is, you know, through observing at my own co-working space, I saw how impactful it was just for people to be together during the workday and that we really were like literally changing lives by just introducing people to each other and hosting events where they could come together. And then, you know, when Dr. Sanjay Gupta came out with his article about the loneliness epidemic in the Harvard Business Review, I was like, oh my God, this is what we're combating. And so I started telling the co-working world about it and like, guys, this is our why. This is why we need to do this is to help people feel a sense of belonging during the workday where we spend the majority of our day. And, you know, then COVID happened and we all went home. And it was great because then every company in the world got to figure out that you don't need to go to the office to do work. And so then with the advent of hybrid working, you know, co-working has really been continuing to just grow and grow and grow with no end in sight because it's a place where people feel connection during the workday. And so, you know, that's really important to me. But then now, you know, I go to co-working spaces all over the world. I visited thousands of co-working spaces and, you know, everyone's like, look at my yoga studio. And I'm like, that's great. And then they're like, here's my gym and it's empty. And I'm like, everybody knows we need to address physical health, but I'm also really interested in addressing mental health with therapists, as you know. And so this April at our 50th event, I challenged the operators to not only offer physical health, but offer mental health services. And I believe that co-working could be the first industry in the world to offer free mental health services. And I've already got brands signing up to test it out and try it out. Adam Walker from the Foundry in London is one of the first, and he's working on it. And it's just something that the world needs. So why not co-working? I think co-working, because we've always had community at our core, is the perfect place to introduce mental health services.
Yeah, I love it. And I loved meeting Adam too. So Liz and Adam came to class to really talk about their initiative. And, you know, this is our groups and culture class at Harvard, which is really, how do you bring people together? And so, you know, as we were chatting, and this is in part probably why we get along so well, because we have sort of like a shared vision around this, like how can you use belonging to solve mental health problems? And I think I told you, like, before groups as we know it today, you know, I built a company where we brought strangers together online to deepen connection and talk about shared problems, right? So it was almost like scaling support groups for everyday issues. The challenge we saw in that, and we had raised some early dollars, was that like we're kind of treating the worried well, if you're using clinical terms, right? So a lot of these people weren't in acute distress. There's a very fine line, but there's a very fine line between, you know, say like anxiety and stress, right? So in the licensure world, you can bring high quality, fantastic psychologists to run a support group around stress management. But the minute you put a diagnostic label on it, the psychologist has to be licensed in the state in which you're providing the care. So it just changes things. So we're pretty much going as up to the line as we can to capture people before they would kind of tip over, hopefully into like a more capturing a broader swath of people.
Yeah.
But what you have going for you is like, we were trying to get people to come to a space for this purpose exclusively. You already have the space created. People are already coming here. And now you're adding more of the construct to just bring people to put like the clinical guardrails or coaching guardrails around it to just extend their time. And belonging is a really, like, humans have two core needs. They have many needs, but two really primary ones. One's control. If you're out of control, you're at risk, you're unsafe, you know, and belonging. Same thing. Mm-hmm. If you don't have belonging and connectedness, it's like a core human need, right? And so you're kind of beat up just by default because you're co-working to be able to serve this need through like a social initiative, like deepening connection and relationships to solve mental health problems.
Yeah, because it's also like, It's been interesting because a lot of people have been like, you can't do that. And, you know, why are you doing that? And I'm like, you know, I've had family members who have died by suicide. I know so many people with anxiety and depression and mental health diagnoses. And it's so prevalent in our society. And I'm like, if not us, then who? Like, somebody's got to step out and do something different. We've got to come at things from a different angle because what we've always been doing isn't working.
100%. I mean, we're bringing psychologists to teams at work, right? And it's like we started off in the model that I was describing. And then basically we got traction earlier by bringing psychologists to teams at work to increase ultimately connection. We label it and brand it different ways as companies, you know, are like, that's a nice to have. But when we can tie it to cohesion and then ROI and then prove it, companies are really excited about it. But why it works, and it's like because we're hardwired for connection, social by nature, when you have strong relationships, it improves all outcomes from mental health to physical health to retention to profitability to engagement. It doesn't matter what you measure. It's because it's who we are as a species, you know?
The other thing I wanted to do was I want co-working spaces to offer it for free. And I want it to be without like filling out a form or whatever, because you know, we have a hard enough time getting men through the door anyway. Like, we just have to remove all the barriers to entry. Like, they just need an open door policy. Yeah. And again, I know I'm asking for crazy, unreasonable stuff, but you know what? We can figure it out, and we're going to figure it out. It's all figurable, audible.
Yeah. It's, I think, you know, it's like semantics is the thing. People get freaked out by mental health. Like, we work a lot in the construction industry. So, you know, like men who are not the first people raising their hand to talk about their feelings or mental health issues, they also are very much at risk for suicide and depression and all these things. Yep. Right. And so it's like, how do you deliver service in a way that the people want to sign up for? And so at least in our work, we see people being more willing to talk about like optimization and performance and like this stuff and the emotional blocks. But from there, like that's the first entry point. Right. And then from there, like you end up talking about your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors underneath. It doesn't matter what it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes so much sense.
So it's like, it's a language thing, and it's like what we spent a lot of time solving for on the company side, but it feels like you're trying to do the same thing, just more on the individual within a community where people are already there, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, I don't, you know, the great thing about co-working is it goes across all industries, right? You have startups, you have entrepreneurs, you have technology companies. We've got a lot of corporations now. And and that way it's like we can just remove the barriers and be like, hey, there's somebody you can talk to behind that door over there, and all you have to do is walk through it.
Yeah. 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 And the fact and that I think it's
Yeah. And I think you're right. I do think we have to pay attention to nomenclature. I think that there will be a way to do this to maybe get through some of the barriers to entry that people have around it. If we change it to a coach, or if we change it to a different term, like it's just the end result is people need somebody to talk to who can help them and offer resources.
And who are clinically trained. So the thing is, so like in our old model, like the people who are best at doing the work that we want to get done were clinicians. There were masters and doctoral level people. And even at groups now, we call groups 2.0, we only hire masters and doctoral level people because they're skilled at the relational dynamics, and strong relationships drive outcomes, right? So, but you can't be providing mental health therapy if you don't want a clinical like intervention, but you can have a therapist provide coaching. So that's basically what we did. So you have these really well-trained people that are seeing people. It's like really a fine line there, right? But there's a, I think there's a way to scale what you're trying to scale by like playing in that space, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the inspiration from it came from me watching Billions on, I think it's Showtime, and seeing like, oh yeah, this is so helpful to have somebody on your team that can help you address those deep rooted things that are holding you back.
100%. So when we kind of, when I joke about groups, I'm like, we're democratizing Wendy Rhodes and productizing around her, because people, especially men, get it.
Yeah. Yeah. When you mention that, men get it. Yeah, for sure.
They want to sign up to be seen by Wendy. They do not want to sign up to be seen by the psychologist in a moo-moo that like they have in their mind, who's going to like have their mommy issues.
You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, it's just like that show that's on Showtime now with a therapist, right? That's what they don't want.
Yeah. Oh, which one? Is it Shrinking?
There's one that does all the like marriage counseling stuff. Oh, and and she just looks like what everybody thinks a therapist looks like.
Yeah, it's like you can't do that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's redefining, and I think it's redefining what psychology is, and it's about whole person health, right? Yeah. And, you know, I'm a clinical health psychologist by training, and the model that we look through, which I think this way I see the world, but I think it'd probably be helpful, is a biopsychosocial, sometimes spiritual, depending on the person, lens.
Yeah.
So if you can figure out like, or not figure out, understand how someone's biology is like serving them or not serving them in terms of health and well-being, like that's where you, an area you want to explore. And then, psychological sort of coping mindset, the tools that we use to manage. And then social is really the community. What's the strength of the relationship? Right. How is the community set up? And when you don't have community, you're way more at risk. You have low belonging. Totally. And it impacts mental health outcomes. And then the spirituality, it's really about purpose. Like, how do you see yourself committed to something bigger? It doesn't have to be religious. It could just be like, where do I fit in the world? What, you know, how can I contribute? That matters too.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting as I look through the, like the lens of the future of work, you know, the things that we're really seeing tracking right now are, you know, tons around health and wellness, all the saunas and the cold plunges and all of that integrating into work and integrating into social, which is fantastic. In fact, I'm here in Austin, Texas, and we have so many of these kind of companies and brands opening up that are fitness, wellness, longevity, and a place to work. And, you know, we're seeing clubs really coming out of the woodwork and more than ever. But all of them have this like kind of health and wellness bend. And we talked about that in New York in April. The other thing that everybody knows, you have to do physical health.
Yeah.
What everyone's going to know in the future is you have to do mental health as well. Yeah. And so, and it's not a sound bath and a meditation. It's so much more than that.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, you know, I think the other thing we're going to see is a huge focus on food, because food is your fuel. So we'll start to see food that's like, it's not just gluten-free or vegan. It's, is this heart healthy? Is this gut healthy? And then we're also starting to see a myriad of products come out that are really interesting. I'm talking to a company this week who is a scent company that has scents that help you focus or help you relax. And so there's just this huge new avenue coming out. And what's great about Juicy and what I can do is I work with actually a lot of brands as well to introduce themselves to the co-working world. Because what's great about co-working is it has like a, you know, network effect on steroids. So if you're selling to a co-working brand, you're selling to their whole community. So like if you're selling to Industrious, they have over 200 locations around the world, right? So you now have millions of people to sell to. And, you know, it's just one person you need to know at Industrious.
Yeah.
And so
and you're like just, a key holder there. I feel like you know all these people. These are your people.
I do. They are my people. Yeah. That's what I've been working on for the past 14 years is these relationships. And I see it as my job in the world is to know all of the co-working leaders in the world, to know what's next, and to help them future-proof their business. That's really what Juicy is there to do, is to next level you and help you future-proof your business.
Yeah, you're making me think, and it's coming together. Like it's like these ideas of these social wellness. So like when you look at the whole person spectrum, right, within like well-being, there's, I think, 6 or 7 dimensions. Like I think it's out of Stanford, and social wellness is one of these things that it's hard to measure connectedness, right? And that's part of what we're doing through that the incubator at Harvard is like it's really operationalizing connection cohesion. So you're like, what are the things? How do you measure it? Because companies want to know, right? But it's the same problem you have too, which we all have, which is like, how do you measure this? And like, what are the things you're going to change? But it's making me think of like social wellness is one of these areas that is super underserved within the mental health space, the physical health space. People are kind of, because it feels amorphous, they don't know how to measure it. Therefore, they don't know what to do about it. But especially in the AI coming out of COVID and especially in this sort of AI era, people are super disconnected and are getting more and more disconnected than we already are. So this is getting more and more important to understand and to like lean into and build constructs to serve people, ultimately changing their health.
And it's interesting too, because like that was when WeWork IPO'd, like they're one of their biggest problems was you couldn't put a dollar figure on community.
Yeah.
And so now what's interesting is some of the software is trying to figure out how to measure community.
Yeah.
And if anybody out there knows how to measure community in a meaningful way across multiple locations, please reach out to me, because that's something we haven't figured out.
How do you define community? Is it community that you're really trying to measure, you know, or is it connection?
I think it's both, but it's interesting. There's a technology company that can kind of manage or can look at, how many times people interact and bump together physically. Mm. And so you're assuming there's a connection if they're together for more than a certain number of seconds.
Yeah.
Community is so much more than that. It's not just that you're connected, it's that you feel part of.
Yeah.
And that's the hard thing to measure and figure out, right?
Yeah.
Is how do you measure people's level of connectedness?
Yeah. Well, it's underneath connection. So I think about cohesion, right? It's connection plus alignment on a team, but connection's a core part of it. So thinking about things like belonging, psychological safety, trust, communication patterns. So it's how do you... And a lot of this comes from both self-report. How do you feel, right? Do I feel like that you're going to do what you say you're going to do, which is trust, right? Versus interactions is a behavioral thing, right? We could be in the same room. We could have the most toxic relationship and we see each other all day.
Right.
You know?
And, it's also, do you show up to things? Are you participating? Yeah. Are you being part of? And, the way it was interesting at my co-working space that I had, I was always trying to figure out these things. And one of the things that I knew I really had figured out community when a member had gone on vacation and they were in the area and they stopped back in because they wanted to just kind of check in and see what had been going on because they'd been gone. And I was like, oh, that's stickiness right there. When somebody wants to just come in and touch base, that's amazing, And then I had another person that was kind of in a mental health crisis and called me up and asked me, I wasn't open on the weekends. And they asked me if I could open up that weekend. And I said, sure. And I opened up the space for her. And then I came back a couple hours later and I was just like, are you okay? What's going on? And she was like, I was about to have a mental breakdown.
And
Link is where I feel most calm. And I needed to be away from my family and just breathe, because she was going through a divorce. Her business was imploding. She had problems with some substance abuse. And she's like, I just needed to be here. And I was like, wow, that's incredible.
I mean, it's, that sense of belonging. And then I imagine too, it's also the control piece where you know the people, you know what to expect. You have the environment, it's contained. It's not just hopping on. You get belonging in different ways, right? But it's a way that's ever there. It's sort of evergreen. Yeah. That is settling for people.
Yeah. And I think it's it's also, it's interesting too, because it's also just as basic as looking people in the eyes and figuring out people to introduce other people to, it's people just don't realize how simple it is to get it started, because I think we all naturally try to connect, right? Because when you first meet somebody, you're like, oh, how do you know each other? You're looking for the point of connection.
Yeah.
Or, oh, where are you from? Oh, I know somebody from there. Go to a conference. You do that the whole time. You're looking for the connection. We naturally want to be connected to people. And as soon as you find a connection, you're like, oh, I know that person too. Or, oh, I went to school there. And it's just, it's a natural thing for humans to connect. And when you're home alone all day in front of your computer talking to Claude, you're not connected.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. And it's people think of connection as an emotional driver, but it's actually, because when you're not connected, you're vulnerable. It's like we're tribal by nature. We're pack species. And so think about if you're in the woods and you are alone, you're vulnerable to getting eaten. If you're at work and you're alone, you're not going to get promoted. So it's our brain is wired for survival. So it's consciously and unconsciously assessing how safe am I? So your brain's wired for safety to stay alive and efficiency. Right. Mm. So those are the things. So it's always kind of scanning, am I safe? Do I belong? Where do I fit here? Where are my people? How do I create those connections? Because it's actually protective. So that's why it's so powerful for us, because we're actually hardwired for it. And we kind of like forget that, and then are setting up this society really focused on efficiency and not thinking about the connection needs that are just so basic to who we are as like animals.
Yeah.
You know,
but yeah,
what
for
I
sure.
do think, and I'd be curious around your kind of futurist perspective here, is like, I think AI is the new shiny object that will, it's not changing, it's coming. But where we're going to see kind of like what we saw in COVID is people feel awful. They feel more disconnected. They're not quite sure what to do. And then they're looking for tools to like get connection in whatever environment they're in. So for you, it's co-working. For us, it's work, like, or work within teams, really. You know,
yeah,
but
I think
it's not going away. Like,
yeah, what we're going to see actually is, you know, and through my futurist lens, it's getting worse. It's not getting better.
Yeah,
and it's getting worse because of AI, because more people are going to become solopreneurs, because it's very, it's much easier to launch a company when you have AI. And so we're going to see this huge growth of solopreneurs, right? And so people are going to be more lonely. AI is fantastic. I think it's a game changer. I'm excited that I'm alive to watch the birth of it, but it is, you know, already troublesome, and we're just going to see loneliness get worse, not better, unless we decide to make some changes.
Yeah. It's changing how we're structured as a society in a relational lens. And I think like cognitive offloading gets a lot of attention right now. It's like, well, it's making me dumber because turning the cloud. But I think there's a, also, and I've written a bit about this, is like the relational offloading. And I've made this sort of joke that Charlotte, who's our COO, she's like my partner here. And she's like my work wife, but Claude's like my mistress. I'm turning to Claude because he's there at 11:30 and he's easy and he's telling me what I want. And it's like super hot and sexy and all the things. But like Charlotte's feeling left behind. And like I, and then it created real, actually, you know, distance that needed to be addressed. Like we had to work through that basically. And great. You know, we just had to think like, no, I've got to make sure that I'm picking up the phone or like I'm working in Cloud, but then I got to bring it back to the team and make sure we're, you know, like doing the actual work, that it's not just me and Cloud like running off in our secret little rendezvous, you know, which is what was happening just because it was so easy.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it too, is in the future, you know, right now, you know, there's all these, you know, little verified checks. The verified check is going to move to human, because human is going to be valued so much more, because how often are you in, you know, customer service hell talking to a computer trying to figure shit out, and you're like, just give me the human, just give me the human. Can I talk to a human? You know, and that's going to be valued even more, because you just need human reasoning at some point. Computers aren't able to really go to the level we need them to yet.
Absolutely. And we don't even know what that, like, there's so many things we don't understand even today around the brain, human dynamics, what we get from each other. How can we copy that when we don't even understand?
Right. We don't understand the brain hardly at all.
Yeah.
It's like, we can't replicate it.
Exactly. How are we going to do that? Or consciousness, or like all this stuff, like, it's just, it's not going to happen like anytime soon.
So I'm a big fan of telling people, like, don't be afraid of it. Will people use it for bad? Of course, people do everything for good and bad, but just why don't you focus on the good and don't worry about the bad?
Yeah. And focus on like how you can, I think there's like, sure, be more efficient, and how are you going to be thinking about building relationships too, and whatever context you're in, because that's going to have a real cost if you're neglecting that part of your work and how you're spending your time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been deep in projects this week and haven't made it into the co-working space, and I feel it. I need to go.
We could talk forever, Liz. This is really fun. Of course, I always go over because I love these things. What have I not asked you, or what would you want to share that I, you know,
You know, I think probably would be like, well, how are you going to do this, right? How are you going to get co-working spaces across the world to offer free mental health services? And, you know, my answer to that would be twofold. One is, I'm not going to figure it out. because they have to figure it out. And and because it's the right thing to do, and because we have a crisis, and because it's not getting better. And so, you know, what I'm doing is I'm holding an industry accountable. And I'm calling up people and saying, are you doing this? How are you doing this? And then I'm taking people that are making strides and replicating that for other people. The great thing is, because this is a grassroots kind of thing, like Bobby, you've helped me. You've given me some great ideas and you've shared some information that's really helped me and connected me with people. Well, you know what? I got a call from a guy in England who's like, hey, we built this app for somebody else. They went out of business. Could I turn it into something to make Juicy Access happen? And I'm like, sure, you know,
like, that's amazing.
Great. And so I have people calling me with ideas, which is great. If you're out there and you've got an idea that you think can help us bring mental health to people through co-working, I'm all ears. So, you know, I think it's a crowdsourced, grassroots, we're going to figure this out kind of thing. And the great thing is I've been saying this lately, and I believe it is, co-working was meant for something more. It's not just a co-working space where you go and find community. It's now going to be a place where people can go and get mental health help. And that's so next level from just getting a community.
Well, no, it's just like, it's, like reconceptualizing what, like the space and what it brings, right? So you think about it as a place to go to work, but it's really, you're talking about more of like a space to go and like spend the majority of your time. And what, if you're crafting that from the ground up, what is that? How, and what, then it begs a question, what are the needs of the human? Then I might be looking through the biopsychosocial purpose lens. And then how do those spaces set that, you know, could offer those.
Yeah. And if you want to do better and be better, mental health is a huge part of your future. Period.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, physical health is great and it helps your mental health, but number one is your mental health.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, people are always saying like, time is your most valuable asset. No, it's not. No, it's absolutely not. Your most valuable asset is your physical and mental health, because if you don't have those, you have no time.
Yeah. And you're probably not like alive or functioning well.
Right.
Right. Like ground zero, stay alive. That's like, just don't die and like have a reasonably healthy life.
Right.
You know, we could keep talking, Liz, and now you've got my mind going in all these different directions. I want to dig up that old deck that I showed you and just like put it together and be like, what can we do here?
Yeah.
You're incredible. Keep up the amazing work. You know, you always got like a big supporter friend in me, and just thanks for sharing your time.
I know, and I appreciate you. Thank you. This was great. I love being around you because it always sparks my brain.
Oh, well, it's fun. Me too. My brain's like going on fire right now. So I'm going to, but it's like, how do you put a construct around this? You know, so I'll think more about that.
Love it. I need all the help I can get.
Oh, thanks, Liz.
Thank you.